Welcome to Puro Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. My name is Gilbert Garcia, opinion writer and columnist, and I'm joined by
Metro editor Greg Jefferson.
Nancy Prayer Johnson, deputy editorial board editor.
We're going to talk about a few things today. I want to talk about what's happening in the U.S. House, the shooting in Lewiston, Maine, and the reaction we've had from some of our politicians to that horrible tragedy. And also what's going on with the Bexar County Elections Office. I want to start by talking about the election of Mike Johnson, the Louisiana congressman, as Speaker of the House last week. This followed about 3 weeks of turmoil among Republicans. You had Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker, removed from office. You had Matt Gaetz leading kind of an insurrectionist move against him. And after that, you had Steve Scalise, Tom Emmer, Jim Jordan, all failing to garner enough support. And finally, last week, we had Mike Johnson, who's been in the U.S. House for less than 7 years and is probably not known by most people.
Which is why he's Speaker of the House
getting to the super low profile. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, we've seen a trend in recent years when it comes to U.S. Supreme Court vacancies that presidents will sometimes think, maybe if I get somebody who doesn't have too much experience and hasn't ruffled too many feathers, and there's not a big body of work that people can go through, that might actually be a good thing. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of that at play here because he hasn't made a lot of enemies. He's a very, as far as his personality, he's soft-spoken, mild-mannered. He talks about civility a lot, very congenial personality. Mm-hmm. But what I want to get to is the fact that Republicans ultimately rejected Jim Jordan, at least in part because he was seen as this MAGA extremist. Mm-hmm. He was somebody who worked very closely with Donald Trump to try to overturn the 2020 election. And Mike Johnson has a lot of the same views, but just a very different personality.
Yeah, he's very low key. But I mean, it's there was a great Matt Gaetz quote to the Wall Street Journal over the weekend in which he said, look, so Gaetz has taken a lot of hell for, getting rid of, setting in motion the deposing of Kevin McCarthy. A lot of his colleagues believe he kind of needlessly threw the party conference into chaos. And his point to the Wall Street Journal was, are you telling me that Mike Johnson is not an improvement over Kevin McCarthy?
So he feels like he won.
Yeah, yes. He does. He feels like you have a much more conservative speaker than you did before. Mike Johnson's not part of the Freedom Caucus in the House, but he is certainly a staunch Trump supporter. I think he's going to give them a lot of what they want, that particular caucus.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Nancy?
I think so, too. He's going to give them exactly what they want. And I think, it's worrisome, really, the more you dig on his background, mm-hmm. and the things he's said about, especially lesbian, gay, transgender, mm-hmm. His Bible thumping, his, reliance on all of that. And I mean, it's ultra conservative, right? But it is disturbing, and I don't know, it's worrisome on what he could do. His personality could be more laid back for a little bit here, but I feel like with power can come some really disturbing action as well.
Yeah, and I think it speaks to the fact that Republicans were worn out from this process. Mm-hmm. It was an embarrassing situation for them, and they wanted to get somebody. The ultra conservatives, the Matt Gaetzes in the House, they were not going to be satisfied with certain people. They're not going to be satisfied with the Tom Emmer, and they certainly weren't satisfied with Kevin McCarthy. Mm-hmm. And in Mike Johnson, they got the guy they wanted. Whereas I think what we see here is kind of how politics can be so superficial and shallow, because mm-hmm. the people in the Republican caucus who objected to a Jim Jordan, mm-hmm. They just looked at Mike Johnson's sort of style and temperament and thought, oh, well, he's better. Even though really, I mean, right. This is someone who wrote an amicus brief mm-hmm. on behalf of Ken Paxton's lawsuit challenging the 2020 election results in four states, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, right. Georgia, mm-hmm. Wisconsin, and Michigan. Mm-hmm. And the argument that he made there was that we had seen this unconstitutional process take place because these states, and there were other states who also changed their election rules that year. This was the worst year for the COVID-19 pandemic, and states were struggling to find out how do we open up the election process, give people more time and more locations to vote, we're going to have a lot more mail ballots. How do we give the people who are processing them more time to deal with this? Because we're in a very unusual situation. Mm-hmm. And so states were changing election rules. Mm-hmm. And he said this was unconstitutional in the case of these four because their legislatures were not involved and that the legislatures have to make these changes. There was no mention in either Ken Paxton lawsuit. We've talked about this on the podcast. In either the Ken Paxton lawsuit or in the amicus brief that Mike Johnson wrote on behalf of Ken Paxton's lawsuit about the fact that in Texas, we had Greg Abbott change our election rules because of the pandemic that year. He added 1 week to early voting for the November 2020 election. And he also extended the time period in which people could turn in mail ballots if they wanted to turn them in person. He did not bring in the legislature. There are actually calls from people in the legislature saying maybe we ought to have a special session to deal with the fact that we've got this emergency. He did it all on his own. Mm-hmm. We don't see that in the amicus brief. Mm-hmm. It was okay. Why? Because who won the 38 electoral votes in Texas? Donald Trump.
Right.
So that was not, there was
so
no.
So hypocritical.
And so, yeah. And people say, well, you know, but he made a more constitutional legal argument, but there you can find interviews where he talked about voting machines and questioning whether the voting machines were on the up and up. Mm-hmm. This is someone who's called for a national abortion ban. He has authored Don't Say Gay bills when he was in the legislature in Louisiana. He wrote bills trying to protect people from having to basically comply with same-sex marriage, the same-sex marriage law. He has in op-eds and in various things that he's said and written over the years, he's referred to same-sex relationships as an abnormal lifestyle, dangerous sexual conduct. He referred to same-sex marriage as the dark harbinger of chaos and sexual anarchy in this country.
Unnatural, and that yes. they can't have, they shouldn't be able to decide what they do behind their bedroom doors. Yeah. Like, wait, what?
Yeah, some of these things, wow. where he's talking about the abnormal lifestyle, this was written in an op-ed in which he came out against a U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn Texas anti-sodomy law. Mm-hmm. He thought this was a terrible thing. He thought that this law should have stayed in place. So this is where he's coming from. And if we're going to credit some members of the Republican caucus for standing up against Jim Jordan, and these same people came out and voted for Mike Johnson, we ought to acknowledge the fact that, you know, this is the same person, but with, you know, with just a softer voice and more congenial manner.
I just think that they chose not to. I mean, now you can Google and find anything, right? I mean, you know, journalists are doing it now. And I just feel that they chose not to look at his background. Like somebody, one of the representatives actually said something, was quoted as saying like, oh, I need to Google him, you know, and like, okay, well, you should have Googled him before.
Well, yeah. I mean, it had probably gotten to the point for most Republican members of Congress of the House. The pain had to stop. I mean, they looked like the chaos party that couldn't, couldn't even elect a speaker, let alone actually govern. They couldn't get past, you know, the starting point.
Yeah.
I would bet anything they had plenty of internal polling showing how much damage that was doing. And, like I said, the pain just had to stop. I'm sure a lot of Republicans outside of the Freedom Caucus, and maybe who aren't as socially conservative as Mike Johnson, were aware of his background, but said, okay, look, he's mild-mannered. He's kind of plain-looking, every guy.
His name is so common.
Conveys humility.
Yeah,
you know,
right, yeah. So let's suck it up and just do it and get moving. Because
did you watch that the Stephen Colbert episode over the weekend? And he said, who doesn't? And he asked the live audience, who knows somebody named Mike Johnson? And then everybody raised their hand. He said, all those people you know would be better than him.
Well, we're talking about Mike Johnson. we had a horrible incident in Lewiston, Maine, mm-hmm. Last week, where 18 people were killed and 13 injured in an act of gun violence, the worst act of gun violence we've seen in the United States this year. And Mike Johnson's response, he was interviewed by Sean Hannity on Fox shortly after this happened. And Sean Hannity said, well, you know, when these types of shootings happen, we always hear from the left that they're, you know, immediately there's a call for gun control. And Mike Johnson said, at the end of the day, the problem is the human heart. It's not guns. It's not the weapons. And given the fact the United States has some of the highest gun murder rates in the world. Hmm. I mean, the question I have, and I'm going to throw this to you, Greg, if it's not about the weapons and it's about right. the human heart, does that mean that there's something uniquely terrible about the human heart in the United States? Are we particularly sick right. in this country? And when it comes to,
I mean, I think social, I think that's an article of faith among social conservatives mm-hmm. that, you know, that our culture is sick. I mean, to them, they think it's decades of liberalism. Mm-hmm. That only began
not efficient enough.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of started to come undone with the election of Ronald Reagan, but that a lot of our a lot of the problems with the national character are rooted in the left. Say that's true. You know, it's as far as I know, it takes a while to actually change the human heart. So if mm-hmm. they're going to do it programmatically, right, if they're going to legislate, a good heart, mm-hmm. right, that's going to take some time. And in the meantime, we just have to put up with a lot of mass shootings. Like you could do gun control legislation to do something about it, but that doesn't seem to be an issue.
So the people with a sick human hearts would be able to do less damage.
That's right.
I mean, I think they would inflict less.
Yeah. I mean, and then when everybody's got, you know, everybody's healed, everybody's mm-hmm. whole again, mm-hmm. then we can relax gun controls, but that doesn't seem to be a thing.
Yeah.
When I first heard of it, I just heard there was a shooting, a mass shooting. It was happening as an active shooter. And, I think it was Carrie Clack who was on a text. I think that's mm-hmm, the first time mm-hmm. I had heard of it. Mm-hmm. I was off last week. I was trying to tune out the news and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then right away, my mind just went to, is it a school? And that's the first thing I thought. Mm-hmm. And then I started to say, I checked X, right? Formerly Twitter. And the first people I saw responding were Uvalde families, right? Uvalde victims, families. Mm-hmm. And they were just so upset about it. Of course, it just brings it back.
Sure.
And for, you know, John Cornyn as well, saying stuff like it's not the guns.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And that there's just no way they're going to legislate anything. I mean, John Cornyn is a champion for education, right? And for mm-hmm. students and for young people. And I have a lot of respect for him. But when it comes to this, and I know this wasn't a school, but these were mm-hmm. people, these mm-hmm. were innocent people. Again, we know that children are just sitting ducks in schools, you know, and the fact that he's not, and that the Republican Party refuses to look at this for what it is. But on the other hand, I look at it like this, like, and I know it's kind of an interesting comparison, but one of the biggest things that, that the Republican Party always talks about is fentanyl, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're talking about fentanyl. And they're trying legislating and doing, you know, fentanyl. And fentanyl is horrible. It really is. What if they were to say, like, it's their heart, not the fentanyl? You know, it's their heart. It's their mental health. Why are they taking fentanyl? Well, they feel like they need to treat a mental health issue, or they're depressed, or they're whatever, or they're experimenting and whatever. But it's not the fentanyl. You know, leave it out there. Yeah. Like, so is
we're,
that
we're,
okay?
Yeah, I mean, we're actively working to prevent the smuggling of it because right. we don't want it reaching people.
Absolutely.
And like you said, people have ultimately have, you know, the decision to make whether or not they're going to use it.
So that's how I see it, is like they pick and choose, and it is just beyond hypocritical. And the bottom line is they need to take care of people and they have to legislate. And when they say stuff like, Johnson saying about the prayer, it's not wrong to pray about this and to hope and pray about it. Well, okay. But what you're supposed to govern. You're supposed to govern. And so
it's not an either or proposition.
You're just saying pray, hope and pray that it's not going to happen again.
Yeah. I mean, there obviously, when we've talked about, you know, mental health is obviously a challenge in this country and it's something we need to work on. And there are multiple problems in this country that contribute to gun violence.
Yes.
But it's not an either or proposition. We don't have to say it's the human heart, leave guns alone. I mean, we can tackle this thing. Mm-hmm.
There's a fascination with guns out there. There is a big fascination with these guns. And I think we're learning a little bit more about the shooter in Maine, and I won't name him. Mm-hmm. But what I've read recently is as late as last night, I believe, that it was like a bunker and that he and his family mm-hmm. were really obsessed with these guns and collected mm-hmm. them and things. Yeah. So this wasn't just like an accident. This wasn't just like a, hey, I'm going to go buy this gun. This was an obsession with violence and guns. Mm-hmm. And then he turned around and did this. And so I think, you know, and it's complicated, right? Because at one point, didn't he try to get a gun and then he couldn't because he did disclose the mental health?
He was trying to buy a silencer.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. he disclosed mental mm-hmm. health on
yeah,
there.
Yeah, so he couldn't buy the silencer.
Yes.
But he could get the assault rifle.
And then then the gun shop owner said that he was just really respectful. He said, okay, I'll talk to my lawyer about it and I'll get back to you on it or something. And then, but obviously he still got what he wanted. And we saw that with the shooter in Uvalde as well. I mean, different circumstances, but a lot of parallels, the mental health issues and the isolation and things like that.
One interesting political response was from Maine Congressman Jared Golden, who represents Lewiston, Maine. And he had a press conference, and he acknowledged the fact that he had previously opposed assault rifle bans, and he came forward and he wanted to take responsibility for what he called his failure, and asked for forgiveness, and said that he now believed that this was the right course would be to ban assault style weapons, and he said he'd be willing to work with anyone in Congress to do so. So, you know, I think we evolve over time. We all change our positions on different issues. And I think we see a lot of stubbornness in our politics and sometimes a lot of something happens and they already have their sort of pre-baked sort of response to
echo chambers. You know, we're all in our echo chambers.
This is what my ideology tells me has happened rather than I'm looking at what happened and I'm going to evaluate it. So I take some, comfort in the fact that we saw an example. It would be nice to see more examples of people who are at least willing to question their own belief system and maybe.
I miss that. Is he Republican or?
He's a Democrat.
Yeah. Oh, Democrat. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Before we wrap things up, I wanted to talk with you about a story that we had in the Express News. I think it was over the weekend with Jackie Kellen.
Yeah,
Friday. And Jackie Kellen has been a long time Bexar County Elections Administrator. She announced just after the November 2020 election that had been her last presidential election. We're now 3 years have passed since then, and we're approaching the 2024 presidential election, and we haven't heard anything more about that. And where do you stand with that, Greg?
Yeah, so things stand where they stood at the after the election.
She's still there.
She's still there, and she's not talking about her plans for when to retire. And the reason we had a news story about that is because there are a number of voting rights organizations and liberal groups that really want her to retire. A lot of this goes back to, you'll remember the fight a couple of years ago ahead of the, midterm election, where she wanted to dramatically reduce the number of polling sites. I think it was the Texas Organizing Project. Right. Took her to court. They wanted, it was something on the order of 382, I'm not sure if that's the exact number or not, sites. She wanted something, it was nearly 100, less than that. They wound up, basically she lost that. They got their injunction, topped it. And the number was somewhere in between.
Like 302 something like that.
Yeah, so Commissioner's Court kind of mediated and they got to a number. So that was a pretty raw experience on both sides. The irony is that ahead of that same election, she was getting death threats, not only her, but her staff as well, from, people who,
on the far right who were concerned that, oh my God, you know, this is going to be a yet another rigged election, just like the presidential election of 2020. In other words, adherents of the you know, the big lie that Trump had the election, he won the election in 2020, it was stolen from him. That was still going strong going into the midterm elections. So she was kind of under threat. Her staff was under threat. But what could be her undoing is not that so much as from the left.
Yeah. And I mean, we saw a little bit of this in 2020 when County Commissioner Justin Regas, I think, took the most active role in the Commissioner's Court to try to deal with the pandemic and try to make voting more accessible. Mm-hmm. And he proposed like mega centers for voting, mm-hmm. and I think using senior centers as voting sites, and just various things to try to make the process safer and easier under the circumstances. And she tended to kind of push back on that, and I think there was maybe a feeling from him that, you know, maybe she was kind of set in her ways as far as how things were done, and maybe wasn't as open to new ideas as he would have liked. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. I think in the story, he seemed pretty, he was pretty respectful.
Right. Of the situation. He's a nice guy.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Like, he may disagree with how he does her job. I don't think he wants, he didn't say this, but it wouldn't be surprising if he would welcome her retirement this year sometime, you know.
But he kind of said, let her do it on her terms.
Right, yeah. I mean, he's definitely not in the camp that's trying to pressure her into retiring just as soon as possible.
Yeah.
He's taking a much more hands-off approach, but still, I get the feeling he wouldn't object if she announced her plans anytime soon.
Could you talk a little bit about, because she's, you know, she has a long history here, and I think at least until recent years, you know, mm-hmm. probably, you know, it's never, being an election administrator is always a tough job.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, I don't know that it's ever smooth, but, you know, I think she was probably pretty widely, respected, admired by people across the political spectrum for a long time.
Yeah. I mean, she was highly regarded for a very long time. I mean, but you have to remember, you have to go back in time to the previous election administrator, Cliff Borowski. We had a string of elections that had problems. So, you know, it was difficult to get, election returns, you know, depending on the election. It could come late in the evening, mm-hmm. next day. And it just seemed like they couldn't run, that office could not run a smooth election. She was appointed election administrator, and things went fine for many years. I mean, you know, you had a whole string of kind of seamless elections. You know, she was pretty highly regarded by both, you know, the Republican Democratic parties. She got plenty of props from county commissioners, including Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf. Mm-hmm. You know, he talked her up a lot. Mm-hmm. This is a new experience for mm-hmm. what she's kind of weathered over the last few years.
One thing that I remember, and maybe this was an early sign of some of the challenges she's had, is that in 2019, when Greg Brockhaus ran against Ron Nirenberg for mayor, mm-hmm. you had then Bexar County Republican Chair Cynthia Brehm, mm-hmm. who was, I think, hanging out at the elections office and mm-hmm. was throwing out a lot of accusations about, mm-hmm. you know, that the ballots were not being protected, and that the chain of custody, I guess, yeah. where there were some problems with that. And she was throwing out a lot of accusations. Greg Brockhaus, I think, kind of flirted with the idea of making this an issue, that there mm-hmm. had been some, because that was a close election.
Yeah.
But he didn't, obviously, in the end, he didn't really run with it too much. But that was, you started to have, on the political right, you started to have a lot of this, and this was anticipating what we were going to see with the 2020 Trump election, that you would start to have these people, you know, questioning the legitimacy of the election. And on the left, as you've said, it's been more about not offering enough polling sites. I think that's been the major thing. Or on the right, it's been more like, we can't trust these people. What are they doing with the ballots?
And I think she's really well respected in all the groups. I mean, I haven't heard anything negative about her. I think that she really does. I mean, there's a lot to weigh. There's a lot of pressure. But at the same time, she has to be more transparent at this point. You know, like, she has the pressure to give people an answer. And what is she, 78 years old? And so I can understand that maybe, I mean, nobody knows the magical age that you want to retire. We all have an idea. But when it gets to, I know my dad retired and then he went straight back to work. Now he works more hours because he did not like retirement, right? So maybe she's a little nervous about that. But she should be more transparent about it. I know that the story said that she was, that Sakai, Judge Sakai, was going to talk to her about it soon. So she should be transparent. And I mean, hopefully, no matter what, I hope she's grooming someone or helping someone get ready, or, you know, trying to set the office up in a way where people know the processes and are going to get this right. You know, there's just too much riding on it. And there's got to be people out there who can do the job and do it well. But at the same time, just hopefully her office, her team, right, is prepared. And I think they are.
The level of scrutiny for all elections administrators throughout the country, I mean, it's going to be more intense in 2024 than it's probably ever.
To me, it's remarkable that she appears to still want the job.
After everything.
That's a really good point. You know?
Okay. So,
that's dedication. Well, I think we're going to wrap things up there. We have an election next Tuesday, a week from now. And so, so our next podcast will probably run maybe a day or two later, so we can talk a little bit about the election results next week. Hope everyone's doing well. So we'll be back next week. Take care.